The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is a podcast from LBC. Britain decides. Follow the general election from every angle on LBC.
There's now just 3 days to go in the battle for number 10, and we're continuing our countdown to the general election. From LBC, I'm Ian Dale.
And I'm Sheila Fogarty. This is Britain Decides, LBC's election podcast. After the third terror attack in as many months, the Prime Minister says it's time to change the way we deal with extremism.
While we have made significant progress in recent years, there is, to be frank, far too much tolerance of extremism in our country.
But she's coming under increasing pressure from those blaming her police cuts for putting all of us more at risk.
She has been the Home Secretary for 6 years. She has been the Prime Minister for almost one since then. She has to take responsibility for this.
We'll get into that in a few minutes.
And
I love you with all my heart. Thank you so much.
Some light relief in the form of a wonderful concert in Manchester. So, Sheila, the last time we talked was on Thursday, which seems very, very long time ago, because, of course, we had the question time session with Theresa May and Jeremy Corbyn on Friday. Maybe we'll come on to that a little bit later. But of course, everything is seen through the prism of the terror attack in London on Saturday night.
It is. And strangely, I was alerted to the terror attack on Saturday in the same way that I was alerted to the terror attack in Manchester 2 weeks ago by my brother, who just because he knows we're in news and, you know, and he just and I thought, has this text sent itself again? You know, sometimes that happens. And then when I realised quite quickly that wasn't the case, I thought, oh, not again. And then you could sense quite quickly, not least because of the speed with which the police dealt with it, you could sense quite quickly that we were looking at a real horrific event.
Yeah, I've got a friend of mine works in, well, I better not say exactly where, but fairly high up in the Met, in the sort of terror department, if there is such a thing. And I got a message from, I won't say whether it's him or her, very early on saying this is a major terror incident, because people weren't quite sure at the beginning, as usual in these things. People,
because we always hope for the best,
yeah,
don't we?
Yeah, people often rush to the wrong conclusions sometimes, but I mean, clearly this was. And I mean, it was just in one of the, particularly when you're familiar with the area, you and I have probably often been to Borough Market,
absolutely.
Eaten in restaurants there. And you think, well, there's probably people I know there. And of course, there were. Richard Angel, that in that magnificent interview he did on BBC News about saying, well, I am still going to flirt with men. I'm still going to tell women they're beautiful and all the rest of
Good
it.
Good on him.
Good on him,
we
absolutely.
Are.
And
drink G&T. Don't forget that too.
I'm not
Oh, you're not a G&T man,
no,
are you? No.
No, and I
think I'm talking about this on my programme today on LBC. There are those who sneer at that response, sneer at the Richard Angel G&T comment, sneer at the policeman dancing at the Ariana Grande concert with the kids, you know, dancing with the kids, sneer at the idea that we should keep calm, not be alarmed, carry on. And to that, I would always say, you know, if Elizabeth O'Neill, I don't know whether you saw her over the weekend, Elizabeth O'Neill, the mother of one of the victims of this atrocity, he's alive but badly injured. If she can stay calm, and boy, can she, if she can say in response to this, while her son is still in hospital being treated after hours of surgery, if she can say, I will not change how I live, we must not change how we live in the face of this kind of attack, then the rest of us can. I don't really understand those people who poo-poo the idea that positivity and optimism and joy and kids dancing and hopefulness are any less a part of our fight against terrorism than guns and politics.
Well, I was listening to James O'Brien on the way in today, and he made a similar point. He said, look, we all have individual reactions to this. Some people will light a candle. Some people will go to church and pray. Other people will get very angry and want to bring back internment. And none of those things are wrong. We are all individuals. We all have individual emotions. And I made this point after the Manchester attack, where I think that did affect people quite emotionally. It certainly affected me emotionally. I mean, I have no particular affinity with Manchester.
You'd be dead inside if it didn't.
I've been there. Well, I think some people do just sort of let these things wash over them, but who's to say that's wrong? And I found myself sort of shaving in the morning, listening to the radio, listening to someone who had been there. And I just sort of, I didn't even realise that there was a tear running down my cheek until I saw it. And I said that on the radio at the time and got some huge abuse on Twitter for it. I'm thinking,
People saying, what's that going to achieve? It's self-indulgent.
Man up and all the rest of it. Well, I'm sorry, in these situations, no reaction is wrong. For individuals, the reaction that you have is entirely appropriate.
And the political reaction was interesting because when Theresa May, she has, as we are recording this, she's still taking questions actually in central London after giving a speech. The speech, by the way, could be summarised as "Vote me, not him." But again, we'll come on to that as well. But I thought her speech in the immediate aftermath of the attack. So we're talking Sunday, aren't we? When she gave that statement.
Sunday at 10.
While we have made significant progress in recent years, there is, to be frank, far too much tolerance of extremism in our country. So we need to become far more robust in identifying it and stamping it out across the public sector and across society. That will require some difficult and often embarrassing conversations. But the whole of our country needs to come together to take on this extremism. And we need to live our lives not in a series of separated, segregated communities, but as one truly united kingdom.
She said a lot of things that chimed. People are, I think, rightly throwing some questions at her on the basis of police cuts, the 20,000 police cuts, the cuts to the numbers of armed officers, the changes to control orders. You know, there's a debate to be had around all of those things, and it's being had. But do you think she will have answers to those criticisms? Because they're substantial, aren't they?
There is huge grief at this, but there is also real anger. And one has to say that for her now to say there needs to be a change and that enough is enough. She has been the Home Secretary for 6 years. She has been the Prime Minister for almost one since then. And the first thing that she did when she came in as Home Secretary was cut MI5 staff by 5%, cut the Security and Intelligence Services by 5%, and cut GCHQ by 5%. And 20,000 police have gone. She has to take responsibility for this.
But yes, she was Home Secretary for 6 years and she's been Prime Minister for a year. So, of course, when you hold those positions, you have to be accountable. I don't personally think that just because there have been that number of police cuts that they haven't led to this incident. I think it's ridiculous to say that because of that this incident happened. However, the criticism that's made of her is that, well, if they had still been there, maybe there might have been more intelligence that had been passed on to them in the community, and that there is a legitimate argument to be had.
There absolutely is. And I actually think that's where the argument about policing needs to be had, in deep, deep, deep down into communities. Not, you know, we saw extraordinary responses from the police, the SAS, the armed police, the non-armed police, the off-duty police. We saw extraordinary responses from them, and they were equipped to deal with these men within 8 minutes.
And frankly, you would expect them to, though.
Of course, absolutely.
In central London, you would expect to. But I do wonder, and this is a chilling thing to say in some ways, but if this had happened in the centre of Bristol, would there really be the same response?
Well, I had that very conversation, but Liverpool was the example, not Bristol, with one of my brothers who was a serving officer, as you know, in Merseyside Police for a long time, two brothers, and a sister-in-law in that force. And he was saying to me, look, without a shadow of a doubt, if Theresa May wants communities to tackle extremism at community level, if she wants everybody to feel part of this battle against terrorism, and I think we should all feel part of this battle against extremism and terrorism, he was just basically describing a litany of essential changes that had taken place because of police cuts over the last 10 years of his service, where he saw schools projects slash community policing slash. So the idea that if you've got a concern about a particular individual saying things, or that if you have a copper in that community who literally drops in for tea, then you'll know where to go. If you ring a hotline, put the phone down and that's it, done. It isn't the same. It's important, but it isn't the same.
Which is what happened in Manchester, isn't it? Because, yeah. I mean, we are told that there were 5 calls to the authorities about the Salman.
And we're hearing reports that it happened in this instance with these 3 as well.
And they didn't feel that they needed to follow it up. I'm talking about the people that made the calls. Yeah. They just made the call and thought, oh, well, I've done my bit.
But those connections with police and people have to be made stronger again, I think.
I wouldn't be at all surprised if... yesterday, Theresa May said, enough is enough. We heard Karen Bradley, the culture secretary, on the radio this morning saying, enough is enough. Well, a lot of people have been saying enough is enough for a long time. But the problem is that you can't change policy in the 48 hours after a terror attack. That is a bad thing to do.
You can discuss it.
You can discuss it. And that's obviously what we do on LBC all day. But I think any politician that suddenly comes out with new policies and says, well, I've got the answer to this, we can dismiss them immediately.
Because there isn't one answer.
There isn't one answer. And it's got to be a gradual thing. I think there will be changes in policy. I don't want to hear from Theresa May, I'm going to do X, Y, Z over the next 2 days. Because... that really would be, I think, electioneering.
Well, in that speech at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning, statement speech, whatever you want to call it, she actually just outlined 4 areas that needed looking at again.
And I think that's fine. I mean, I do think she sort of, shall we say, verged on the border of going into politics at the end of that. And obviously, Emily Thornberry's picked that up and one or two others.
And then Jeremy Corbyn picked it up and ran with it. He didn't just run with it in the evening.
He ran a marathon with it.
He drop-kicked it. That's a rugby term, Ian.
Thank you. Thank you for telling me that. Not a game I follow.
Can I ask you, I'm going to paint a little scenario that somebody, not just anybody actually, the former mayor of Liverpool, Joe Anderson, and I had a brief conversation on Twitter yesterday, and he was being heavily critical of Theresa May just after her statement, and I tweeted back and said, look, she won't be the only... Yes, there's room for criticism always, and we must always be open to being critical, but she won't be the only person who needs to look again and again and again at how we tackle this, because it's shifting sands that we're dealing with here. And his response was, she could have... And it just conjured up an interesting image. I can't wait to see your face when I describe this image to you. That if she was really serious about national unity after that event, and speaking immediately after that event, she would have had Jeremy Corbyn standing next to her at that lectern and been the woman that said, our politics has to change in order to tackle this. A new maturity between us, because I actually think this is true, a new maturity between us has to exist. In the way that we saw with John Major, Tony Blair on Northern Ireland, a new maturity, a new cooperativeness around these issues between the political parties. I know that 3 days before an election, standing next to your main rival and giving him or her equal status is probably anathema. But what do you think about that?
I think, as you say, in normal times, you could make an argument for that. You could make an argument for it yesterday. If you think back to Manchester, I think she went out of her way to include Jeremy Corbyn in all the briefings. She phoned him up twice at 4 o'clock in the morning and shortly afterwards.
Yeah, it's not criticism. I'm just suggesting a scenario.
I'm just thinking what Linton Crosby's reaction to that would be.
Yeah. He'd dropkick it.
Well, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I mean, it may not have occurred to them. I've got no idea. I can see the arguments in favour. There are arguments against. And I think particularly, obviously, they're making huge hay at the moment out of Jeremy Corbyn's record on terror, because he's voted against every single piece of anti-terror legislation in his career. So, I mean, it's quite difficult for them to do that.
But now he's supportive of Shoot to Kill. This much we know.
Okay.
We'll leave that one there. But we've just spoken there as journalists. As a citizen, had he been standing next to her then, would you have been reassured? I would.
Reassured?
Not particularly by him. Reassured because the two people who could be prime minister in the next few days would be standing shoulder to shoulder, let's use that phrase, shoulder to shoulder, cooperating, revealing a new maturity about this issue. You don't have to have it about anybody else. You can sling anything you like at each other about the other issues.
I wonder whether Jeremy Corbyn would have wanted that, because if you do that, he could not have made that speech last night, could he?
No.
As simple as that. So bear in mind that he would not appear with David Cameron during the European referendum campaign. I find it difficult to believe that he would have necessarily wanted, for all sorts of reasons,
and I'm
not saying they're necessarily bad reasons,
but
because if you're 3 days out from an election, you have to keep the debate going. That's why it was absolutely right for the general election to continue. It would have been impossible to have cancelled it anyway, I think, and also for campaigning to restart last night.
But you know me, I'm a right Pollyanna, I just want a happy ending.
Still to come, more on the election, more on the terror attack, and also we'll be talking about that wonderful concert in Manchester with Ariana Grande, Liam Gallagher. Was it Liam Gallagher?
It was Liam, not Noel.
Take That and Coldplay. I did see a bit of Coldplay, and we might even mention that appearance on Newsnight on Friday night.
Yours, yes. Interesting.
This is Ian Dale and Sheila Fogarty with Britain Decides, LBC's podcast, as the countdown to the general election reaches its final push. And Sheila, this podcast, you know, it was number 14 in the iTunes charts. How about that?
I won't be happy till it's in the top 10.
I know, exactly. So tell all your friends, sort of give it 5 stars and write a nice review, because that'll help. Now, let's
And we'll be rock stars.
let's have a quick word about the Question Time event on Friday night, which was not a debate. It was Theresa May, 45 minutes in front of a studio audience, and then Jeremy Corbyn. Now, you were at a
family wedding,
so you didn't see it.
Knees up.
I thought that Theresa May needed to do well in that, and she did. She put in the best performance of the campaign so far. She was on the front foot right from the outset. It was a less hostile audience than we saw on Wednesday, but still relatively so. And she had some very difficult questions, particularly on public services, and a lady who did sort of break down talking about mental health. And I thought she did much better than anyone was expecting her to, but she needed to. And Jeremy Corbyn, he also faced some hostile questions, but the mood was slightly different with him. But he didn't step up to the plate. I felt last week that he started the week really well, particularly the One Show appearance, which I watched back over the weekend on Sky Plus. Absolutely brilliant.
Very likeable, wasn't he?
Yeah. The week got worse it didn't improve, let's put it that way. He didn't put in a bad performance, but on nuclear defence, on the IRA, he really was all over the place in that debate.
And sometimes the energy that someone emits is as important as the stuff coming out of their mouth, isn't it, really, I think. And I think that's what you're saying, that Theresa May's energy went up, Jeremy Corbyn's went down.
What was interesting, though, is that there was no real moments from those two performances. They didn't really,
appearances.
They didn't really relate to any of the audience members in the way that David Cameron used to do quite well, and Ed Miliband, possibly to a lesser extent.
But a couple of nice follow-up comments.
Was no sort of... Sheila, thank you so much for that question.
Where
do you work, Sheila?
Yes, yes.
Oh, it's LBC, is it? Yes, of course, they're much better than the BBC,
aren't they?
If
you did that to me, if I was in the audience, I'd be like... Get on with it. Yeah, answer the question, politicians.
So I thought that was an important moment, because it will have had the biggest audience of any of these events.
And what about your own appearance on TV on Friday night, Ian?
Well, indeed.
I also missed that, but I hear it was rather
fiery. Freely available on the internet. Well, it was fiery. I've been doing these election panels on Newsnight. This was the fifth one. And it's Paul Mason and Polly McKenzie from the Lib Dems. And they've all been quite sort of... reflective, I think. And that's the whole point of those panels. You look back over the week. But I'm afraid this one wasn't. And it was largely due to me, because I saw Paul Mason on the Daily Politics on Friday make what I thought was a disgraceful accusation. He said, why haven't we seen Theresa May? Is she unwell? I'm thinking, hang on a minute.
Calling her health into question.
If any of us had said that about Jeremy Corbyn, he would have been right down our throat. So basically, I went for him. On Newsnight. Well, you said earlier on the Daily Politics you thought that she was unwell, which I thought was an absolutely disgraceful thing to say. I think you should apologise for it, because it's out of the Trump playbook. That's what it is.
Your side is calling my leader a terrorist. I won't be apologising for it.
No, we haven't called him a terrorist. We've questioned his terrorist sympathies.
Where has she been all week?
Would you like to apologise for that? Would you like to apologise? Out of the Trump playbook.
She's terrified of debating, and it's legitimate to ask, where is she?
And it did get very fiery, lots of finger pointing on both our parts. And it was sort of towards the end, he called me a racist because I had the temerity to say that I didn't think Diane Abbott was fit to be Home Secretary.
I think if you raise a campaigning politician's health into question, you're in Trump territory, aren't you?
That's exactly the point I made. I said, this is out of the Trump playbook. And I don't really take very well to anyone calling me a racist, particularly if they do it on live television. And we'll see what happens after that.
I want to talk about this concert in Manchester last night, which I watched from start to finish and cried quite a lot.
I love the unity that you're displaying is the medicine that the world really needs right now.
I was conscious that it was, yes, of course it was a concert. Yes, of course it was just a fun event and lots of kids having a great night out with their mums and dads and some adults just clearly there for the music because it was quite a lineup as it turned out. But what struck me while I was watching it on Twitter, and I was tweeting quite a lot as well, was how many people were sneering at things like a fantastic little video of a police officer playing Ring a Ring of Roses with a gang of kids and dancing with them. Really great footage of the entire crowd of what I think it was 60,000 people right from the off when Take That sang Let It Shine. And you could see that all of the acts felt that this concert was about boosting people's morale, important, making people happy, important, giving them great music, vital. And I was really shocked to see on Twitter, it goes back to our conversation at the beginning about people's different reactions to things, shocked to see people on Twitter sneering at the police officer dancing with the kids, for example, saying, if you think a policeman answering dancing with the kids gives ISIS a moment's discomfort, then think again. And I thought, are you watching the same thing as me? This isn't about whether ISIS are uncomfortable or not. This is about Manchester resetting the mood of its city. It's about grief-stricken and traumatised children and families being told, either being there and loving it and cathartic, the singing, the dancing, the crying for some of them. It's about that as well. It's also about saying, hello, this is how we live and this is how we intend to live. And for those people who say that's all just, you know, choose love, silly hippie nonsense, I say it is as vital as security forces, politics. If we don't say this is how we live and we love how we live, what's the point of fighting them anyway?
One of the things that the people who try to inflict these attacks on us, they want to destroy our way of life. They've been brainwashed into thinking that people should not be allowed to be entertained, particularly women, particularly young women, should not be able to go out on a Friday or Saturday night and have fun.
Well, and sing their heads off.
Well, if anything, that was an example of saying, we don't care what you think, we're going to do it anyway. And quite right, too.
And I do think it matters. And it doesn't mean that those of us who support that kind of joy and optimism, it doesn't mean we don't realise we also need the SAS landing in helicopters on London Bridge from time to time. Of course, we know that it needs important, serious political thinking. Of course, we know it needs funding of police forces. Of course, we know all that. That's a given. It's a given that we know it. It's not a given that we get it, but it's a given that we know it. But this, I just think what has happened to those people, that they look at that event and think, bleh.
Well, we'll have it again tonight. At 6 o'clock on my show, I suppose that's just after this podcast goes live, I think. And there's going to be a vigil near London Bridge, organised by Sadiq Khan. And there'll be a minute's silence, and there will no doubt be speeches from dignitaries, and there'll be a lot of people there. And I think these things are important to enable people to come together after these kind of events, and we'll no doubt carry it live on my show. And I think that it's part of our responsibility to do that. And I don't really care if anybody thinks we shouldn't be doing that. They can switch off and go and listen to something else.
Absolutely. It's called communion, and it's called life.
It is called life. Just one thing before we go. How do you think the media handled all of this yesterday?
I think it depends on which media you're talking about, to be honest with you, because I won't name them because I don't want to, but there were one or two reports and reporters that I saw. I'm talking television here, not radio. Of course, this senior service,
so
radio,
better.
Senior service, yeah. Where I thought, you know, some stories require no dramatisation. They require no upping of the energy or the ante of the story because they are truly breathtakingly awful or truly breathtakingly wonderful. See the concert for details. And I think one or two pieces I saw, I just thought, all right, leave it. This doesn't require dramatisation. Mostly on TV and radio, certainly radio, I heard very responsible stuff. I heard presenters and reporters being careful with the people that they were interviewing, eyewitnesses that they were they were speaking to. But there is that question of the focus that's given to them, isn't there?
The other thing is, did it really add anything to the fact that Sky News and the BBC News Channel were actually there with the police cordon across the street? Did it add anything to the viewer's experience of understanding what had happened? I'm not sure that it does in these circumstances.
I'll tell you a moment that I saw live, because I was on my way to bed and then went back downstairs to watch what was unfolding. There was a moment when there was such a scene, it was a BBC reporter actually, and beyond the cordon, behind that reporter, you out of nowhere, with no explanation, obviously, it gave us some sense of how serious things were within that cordon. Scores and scores and scores of people, just ordinary people, young men and women mainly, came out with their hands on their heads. I mean, a lot of people, like hotels full of people emptying with their hands on their heads.
That was in the immediate aftermath.
Yes, it was. And that made me immediately think, oh, hang on, this is huge.
But
this
having,
is Paris
having,
style.
Having a presenter just standing in front of the ribbon across the street, I'm not sure what that adds to anything.
Oh, well, in and of itself it doesn't, but it's being there.
I mean, would it have made any difference if we were doing our programmes down there? I don't think so. I don't think we would sort of... It wouldn't add anything to our listeners' knowledge of what happened.
I disagree. Shall I tell you why I disagree? Because the morning after the Madrid bombings, for example, I was in Madrid, and dreadful bombings on trains on the way into the centre of Madrid. And the feeling in a city the morning after an event like that, particularly in the locale of the bomb or the attack or whatever form it took, is different. It is different. It gets back to normal pretty quickly, but it's very different. And I think as a journalist, you don't have to be there to tell the story. Mm. But if you are there, yes, I do think that with the right reporter or presenter, you get some added value from being there.
And what about the fact that, I mean, the Andrew Marr show was cancelled, for example, and they still had Andrew Marr interviewing Emily Thornberry and David Davis,
but
it was
within
part
that
of
rolling
the news,
news.
Programme. I mean, I got up at 6 o'clock in the morning on Sunday to do the Andrew Marr pay-per-view, nearly got to the BBC when they rang me and said we're cancelling it. And I was trying to work out whether I thought that was the right decision. Now, at the time, I suppose because I then had to drive home again, I was thinking, oh, I'm not sure about that. But now I think it was the right decision.
I agree with you. It was the right decision because, and I had exactly the same. You know, we're such numpties,
we're
aren't
so
we? Sitting
alike.
There going, not that alike. But I had the same questions. And my initial thought was, if it was my programme, I would just want to do my programme and make it all about the event, and all of the guests who come in are political anyway, party political in a campaign, so we'll talk about the event and the implications of it. But actually, I thought it worked rather well that not least because the story was still very much unfolding. At that point, the place was completely sealed off and you still had huge numbers of armed police going in and out of buildings to make sure they were safe. And I think that was still very much a live event.
And then if you compare the fact that the Peston on Sunday programme did go ahead,
I only saw
planned.
The Amber Rudd
well,
interview.
Well, I saw all of it. And there was a very uncomfortable interview with Emily Thornberry because she was being incredibly responsible and saying, look, I'm just not going to get into police numbers. It's not appropriate at the time. And Peston kept going at her and saying, well, I've got to ask you some questions about this. I'm thinking, well, actually, no, you don't and you shouldn't. And it really jarred. And then, of course, right at the end of the interview, he did get a political comment out of her because I could tell her that she was kicking herself.
He broke her.
I can't remember exactly what she said, but it was something about sort of we're better than the Conservatives on this. Mm. And you could almost see her sort of visibly wanting to punch herself in the face because it wasn't an appropriate thing to
say.
Well,
you know, I agree with you on that, but it's the question of the day, isn't it? Or certainly one of the questions of today. You know, a little time has elapsed and that question of police numbers, of armed police numbers, of TPIMs versus control orders they are the questions of today, aren't they?
I think we'd better stop there because I think we've overrun our time, haven't we?
I've got to go and present a programme.
That you do. Well, that is it for Britain Decides, LBC's election podcast. But we are going to be doing this every day this week, I think, including immediately after our programme on Friday. I think we're going to record something.
Can we do it from the nice terrace with a glass of
champagne? Oh, that would be a good idea.
Champagne in our hands.
I doubt whether they'll have breakfast there at 5 a.m, but you never know. Anyway, as you know, you can follow the election from every angle on LBC, on FM, DAB, and online, and at lbc.com. lbc.co.uk. And if you've never listened to Sheila Fogarty on the radio before, she's on
what's wrong with
between
you?
1 and 4 every day. And then I follow her between 4 and 7.
Give us a call.
End of advert.
That was a podcast from LBC. Follow the general election from every angle on LBC. On FM in London, on DAB digital radio, and online at lbc.co.uk.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.